You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
Hand across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Damian Thotson. You may know me as the founder of NBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 285. On today's show, we're joined by Dylan Dente, a.k.a. Dylan Mi Gente, a.k.a. Take a Chill Pill and Dente, of posting and toasting fame. He went to the Westchester Knicks playoff game this past Monday, and he's going to debrief us. That might sound boring. I know. Minor league basketball. Snooze fest. But this was actually a really interesting show, and one of my favorite shows of all my recent shows. We cover topics such as, what's the vibe at the gym up in Westchester? Is the Westchester PR department as ornery and secretive and mean to the press as the big club's PR department is rumored to be? Did he spot any vertical integration while he was up there? Which players stood out? What does he think of G League Coach of the Year Mike Miller? Is G League Coach of the Year Mike Miller the former NBA player who is very ugly? We're going to cover all of this and so much more. Without any further ado, let's start the show. Hit it, Marv!
Yes!
So, Dylan, you went to the Knicks, the G League Knicks, the Westchester Knicks playoff game, their last game of the season. It was this past Monday, I believe.
I did. And myself and Shulman from Posting and Toasting, Jonathan Shulman.
Of course. How was he in real life? Was he as much of a creep as he seems like online?
He was awesome. We had a good time for a little while. We were just kind of standing there watching, and it just kind of making fun of different players for a good chunk of time. And did you know that the new Wizards G League team that's going to be there next year is called the Go-Go's?
The Go-Go's. That's a good name.
That's what he said. I thought it was a joke at first. but he also said, did you know that that's where go-go music was invented? And he could have been lying.
No, that is like, true.
How the fuck do you both know that?
It's just, I don't know. It's just like a DC thing.
Go-go music?
But it's like, it's not what you're thinking of. It's like, now I'm going to like show my ass here. But to me, I think of it as almost like a house music or something. It's like funk and like R&B and shit. It's not like,
yeah, the logo is two bongos, which is actually, that's pretty sick. But I thought that was, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know much about it other than like it's very regional, and it wasn't the go-go music that I was thinking of when I
right
first.
Okay.
So like, yeah.
So what you might have been thinking of is probably what I'm also thinking of.
Right. I'm thinking of more of like a, like, I don't know if it's like 50s mod, like British thing, like people in cages.
Exactly. I thought it was for sure something that didn't originate in America. But
they stole all our good shit, the British people, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles. It's all American music.
They can fucking have it. sorry. We're like a minute in and I've already dropped two F-bombs.
Hey,
I got to,
you know,
peel it back. I know. I'm sorry.
It's funny because from talking to you online, I don't think of you as a big F-bomb dropper. But maybe.
Well, get used to it, pal.
I've like changed who I am by virtue of not trying to curse as much during podcasts because I had a filthy mouth basically my entire life, and it's been a struggle. But not you can, I don't know. You can get through anything if magic made it. You know what I mean?
I do like to keep it clean, but nothing is funnier to me than when you censor with a beep or something like that. So if you could take like 30 to 40 minutes afterwards and censor everything, that would really help me out.
I would love to. And this is why we were talking about this before we went on the air, but this is why I need like live audio right, capabilities, because right. I will not go back and beep stuff, but it would be funny in the moment. I love beeped curses.
Yeah, or you could just have the 7-second TV delay so you can just shut the sound off in the middle of me saying something, like they do in the NBA when Melo screams fuck or whatever.
Yeah.
That's three, by the way. We're keeping count.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, but back to Westchester. Yeah. There was some like confusion online. Was this the conference finals? Was it their first playoff game? There's so little like decent reporting about G League goings ons.
So it was both their first game and the conference semifinals, because there's only it's weird. They set it up. So the Knicks were a one seed, actually, and the one seeds get byes. So I wasn't that well versed in how they run it, but all of the games are just single elimination until you get to the finals, which is a best of three.
Okay.
So it's like this weird
mix of football and old school baseball where the pennant just like gets you in the World Series kind of.
Yeah, I love it though, because first of all, there's no point in playing a series before you get to the finals in G League. And so
halfway through the series, like Xavier Nathan Mays gets called up to the Rockets. You're like, well, I guess we're finishing without him or whatever.
Exactly. If I hung out there long enough, I would have a chance of getting on a roster before the playoffs were over. But it raises the stakes. It's cool.
This is like sort of jumping around based on our outline, but you said like, you know, obviously you're joking, I'd have a chance at making a roster, but is there a huge gulf between like the Dotsons and the two-way guys and the end of the G League roster? Like, can you see that within a roster?
Yeah. So first of all, I'm not joking. I'm kidding. There is and there isn't at times. That didn't make a whole lot of sense, but you know, you can see some of the guys like, I don't want to pick on Hicks, but like a guy like Hicks is kind of a tweener in the sense that, and I'll get to this a little bit more, but a lot of those G League guys, like, they're very talented, but just the way the league goes, they're there because they're undersized or their game is just a little bit obsolete. So like a guy like Hicks, you're like, man, that's a pretty skilled guy. Like I noticed him in warmups, he was moving really well, and I thought that he moved a lot better in person than I thought. Actually, Cornette was a little more stiff than I thought, oddly enough. But yeah, like Dotson.
Interesting.
Dotson, I think, separated himself from the pack. But other than that, I mean, yeah, there's some serious talent out there. And a good portion of the game, me and Shulman were kind of on the floor on the baseline. And those guys, it's an incredibly physical game.
Right, I'm sure. I mean, these guys are literally like fighting for their lives, like as close as you can be without actually being involved in like combat.
You know? Yeah. Kennedy Meeks was down there and just like, that guy's a bruiser. It'd be such a bummer to play against him. So yeah, I don't think there's
Kennedy Meeks is a good name, just as like an aside. I like that. Yeah. Strong. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's one more aside to that. So Kennedy Meeks, I would never pick on someone's like weight or anything like that. But you know, he's a bigger guy. He's one of those dudes that like if he didn't train, he would be.
I would never pick on anyone's weight, but Kennedy Meeks is a fat ass.
No.
I heard you.
But he's like a guy like if you don't, you know, if he doesn't have a professional trainer, he might be in trouble.
Okay. Like a Robert Tractor Trailer.
Exactly. And after we left the game, we're heading out the door, and everyone, you know, like the players and everybody's just kind of hanging out. And he's got a full pizza box just hanging, like from some local place. Full pizza box. I assume it's all for him. But
I'm sure he was like, carbo loading for a half marathon the next day.
I hope so. Yeah. I'm looking for like a trainer. I'm like, is this okay? Like, whatever. I mean, like he won. They got the win, so maybe that's like his treat. I don't know.
But before we go any further, like you brought up Hicks, I was like, I kind of wanted to talk about Hicks a little bit. But you were at Westchester. It's mentioned a lot in coverage of the Knicks. For those of us who haven't gone to a Westchester Knicks game, I want you to sort of like walk us through it a little bit. Like, what's the gym like? What's the atmosphere like up there? Set the scene for us.
Sure. Yeah. So I was recently at like Christ the King High School for the high school national championship game. It's just a high school gym. And I think they're like the same size. So it's like a small place. There's not a bad seat in the place.
Would you say it fits like 1,000 people, or is that like too much? Is it?
Yeah, no, it's in that ballpark for sure. It's small. I've sat before in like the balcony, and the first row of the balcony like hangs directly over the court. It's pretty cool. It's a nice atmosphere. You can hear like the player, any seat you're in, you could pretty much hear them talking. Like, that's a huge thing for me.
Yeah.
And I'll talk a little bit about some of the stuff that we were hearing and stuff. And then, I also love that they have a mascot. His name is Hudson. I went there sometime in March, I think, for a game, and it was his birthday. So they had all these, like, crappy random mascot friends of his that were like, oh, happy birthday, Hudson, like questionable sports teams, like AAA baseball teams. And like some guys might have been just like the local oil change mascots and stuff from like these tire stores or something. Right. But
just some drunk they threw in a suit. They're like, get out.
Exactly.
There.
Like a guy who like was passing out flyers on the side of the road and they brought him in as a mascot. Like, oh, it's his buddy.
A sign spinner.
Exactly. Yeah. But having a mascot is infinitely better than not having a mascot. So they win there. That's kind of like, he was like wiggling his ears when they were shooting free
throws. Wait, so how do they personify? Because Hudson obviously is named after the river. I love when a mascot is like not the name of the team, or it's just like some random animal they pick. It's a dog or something? You said ears.
It is. It's a dog. It's like it's a dog with like a headband, and it's basically a glorified Air Bud. But however, he took like four or five half court shots like backwards, and I don't think he drew rim one time. So even the mascots are like an amateur level mascot compared to guys like Rocky from the Nuggets or like Benny the Bull or something like that. But the kids like the mascots, and I think that's the lure they try, and you know, it's all about the kids.
Can he rip off the headband in frustration if he so chooses, or is it stitched onto the mascot head?
I think it's stitched on, or people would rip it off of him constantly out of frustration. I don't know.
Next time you go up there, make sure.
Yeah. I think it's sewed on. Yeah, yeah.
So I know you went there as press. Mm-hmm. Now, the Knicks as an organization are notorious for being combative with the press, you know, kind of from Jim Dolan. Obviously, it's like where it all stems from, and not everyone in the organization is like this, but they do have a reputation for this, the kind of like gulag-esque PR department. They don't let you ask them too many questions. They don't give guys, access to the big league team. Was it a similar weird vibe down there? Like, what was it like working with the Westchester Knicks, like PR team and all those people?
To keep it brief, it was the opposite of everything you just said. They were like incredibly accommodating. I don't want to put her name out there in case she doesn't want it, but the head of media relations and her assistant were both like really helpful, not controlling at all. They in the press room after the fact, they had Mike Miller came out and answered questions for like a good 10 minutes. He was incredibly engaging. Isaiah Hicks was really friendly with the media afterwards and stuff like that. Okay. And Jordan Henriquez Roberts, I think, you know, like they came out, they all kind of talked. It was a really small, like intimate press room. So yeah, I mean, they were great, to be honest with you. It was a really good time for us.
Ample parking.
That's Shulman's department. I take the Metro North Railroad.
There we go. Good guy.
Yeah.
I want to talk about some actual basketball.
Okay.
But before we do, just want to remind everyone listening that you guys are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network in the entire universe. All right, let's talk basketball.
All right.
I'm going to give the listeners a quick behind the curtain here. When I do those, those little promos for the network, I leave a long silence. It just helps me edit. So it's always fun when a guest is on and I like shout universe and then make them sit there silently for like 5 seconds. So that's your brief peek into how the sausage is made. But yeah, let's talk basketball. I'm wondering what kind of sets they were running. Did they seem vertically integrated with the big league club?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I'm really glad that I have a specific answer, because in the post game, so they're completely integrated. And in the post game, we were asking Miller a couple things. I had asked him about, you know, his staff and development. And one of the things he touched on real quick, that I almost didn't catch until I went back and listened to it again, is that, you know, there is like vertical integration there, and they alluded to the fact that that might be partially responsible for the success of the two-way guys that they've had call-ups to New York, like Burke and obviously Dotson and Cornette and Hicks and those guys, because, you know, there's no learning curve there, and they do run very similar stuff. Like, I mean, I know Hornacek, if we're getting into real like nitty-gritty stuff, Hornacek really loves to run like horns out of sideline out of bounds sets and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they both try to adjust some of their sets for who's on the floor. I saw a lot of the same stuff though in Westchester that I see from Hornacek. They used a lot of zipper cuts nicely. They ran some delay sets with five guys out of the paint. They actually did that like quite a bit. They had a five out set that they ran a couple times early, and it kind of got away from them towards the end of the game, I think. I'm not sure why, because they really struggled actually late in the fourth in that game. But the Raptors, they played extremely physical defense. They're the number one defense in the G League. But early on with the five out sets, Dotson was able to get to the rim with no help behind him. And then Cornette was a good weapon to space the floor. They used even like Rattan Mays, because he's not exactly like loaded with offensive weapons himself. He was certainly capable of getting to the rim. And there was a few sets that had Dotson get some looks. You know, he cashed in early. I think he had like 12 points in the first 6 minutes. So he was really cooking until the Raptors started like face guarding him. And yeah, I mean, I even saw some triangle stuff out there. Like they were mixing it up a lot of the ways that New York does. And New York will still run sets with like O'Quinn up top if he's in the game to make sure that he has the ball in his hands, because he's such a capable passer. I think Westchester could have played to their guys' strengths a little bit more over the stretch of the game. But it's really hard. I looked this up and I brought this up post-game with Coach Miller, but they've had 25 different starting lineups over the course of their 51 games this year. So offensively, I think it's tough to have consistency. And I mean, you could say a lot of people like Van Gundy and guys who have come to Hornacek's defense now say that, you know, you had injuries, and I think he's done a good job considering all the difficulties he's had. Like no one's had more of a tough job than Miller, because injuries are one thing, but you know, when you leave like their entire starting five from the first game all eventually got called up to the NBA. So he's been, you know, toying with lineups left and right.
I want to get to Miller in a little bit, but there were like three things you said during your response to that question that I want to just quickly touch on. One, Rattan Mays, is that the correct pronunciation? Because I've been saying it wrong.
Yeah, so that's when I was watching him at FSU, I heard that a lot. And I think I went back once, because when he played in Summer League, I heard like three different names. And I'm pretty sure it's, hey, look, you live the life you want to live. I think it's Rattan. I could be wrong, and I'm just going to. But I think
like
it's Rattan
Mays.
I
like to correct myself when I mispronounce things, especially people's names. But I will say people should not be embarrassed to mispronounce something, because all it means is that you've read it and haven't heard it. So there's no shame in reading.
Yeah.
So that's the more you know for our younger listeners who are still figuring this thing out. And you used a couple of specific terminology that I just want to do like a quick glossary for, if we may.
Sure.
One of which I was unfamiliar with, but one that I know, but just in case people may not be aware. Horn set. Could you do like a brief, how would you describe a horn set?
So typically with a horn set, you're going to see the two bigs up around the elbow on each side. So like not the foul line extended, but really at the elbows. And the actions look very varied once you get there, but it typically starts there. Sometimes you'll have those two pin down screen. Sometimes you'll have them catch it in the post and then run off something else. You know, you see horn sets a lot happen in the half court with a point guard at the very top of the key, but Hornacek, like I said, he runs them a lot from sideline out of bounds play. So you'll have the three or the two take the ball out on the side, and they still put their bigs up there on the foul line extended. So
that's good. Yeah. No, that's a good horns primer. And the one, I know I've heard zipper cuts before, but I don't know if I could like exactly. I could guess like a little wiggly. Yeah. I don't know. Is it like you fake one way and then cut the other? Like what is a zipper cut? I'm not there.
Yeah, kind of. It's stupid. It should just be called something more like, because it. I know what you're probably thinking, and it was the same thing I thought early on. But like a zipper cut is pretty much just a little bit of a V cut, like a fake one way, and then you're cutting from like the low post area up through the top of the key. Or up towards the top of the court. So yeah, they did that quite a bit. I mean, sometimes you hear them called different things. It like,
I wonder if it's zipper because it's from like the bottom to the top, like, you know, like.
Yeah, like exactly. Kinda. And because it starts with a little bit of like a half fake one way and then you zip up. So,
right.
Yeah, from bottom to top, I guess. Yeah. So that makes sense. Zipper, like your little, like Mr. Rogers type style bottom to top.
Zipping it up. You know, I used vertically integrated before with a little bit of sarcasm, only because Craig Robinson's interview about player development was just filled with a lot of like platitudes and business speak.
Oh yeah,
so you know, it was a little frustrating. Like the idea is sound; like it does make sense to have, you know, both teams on the same page running, you know, similar offenses. Like, that makes a ton of sense. But it was the way he talked about it was, like, a little silly. But I'm curious, while you were there, if you were able to witness anything kind of specific about player development. Were you able to get any kind of more detailed information than what, like, Craig Robinson gave us earlier?
I mean, I have some stats I can rattle off that I think are really impressive about specifically about their shooting.
Yeah.
Real quick about Robinson, though. And I tweeted this, but yeah, like Craig Robinson. So we're the press is one like directly behind center court's like first row.
Okay.
Anyway, so we're directly behind. Like Hornacek showed up. Craig Robinson was there. Like I went through like security with Craig Robinson, and I was like, "Hey, it's Michelle Obama's brother."
Did he Did you have to like put stuff in a thing and go through X-ray? Like, did he take out like a vape from his pocket and put?
Yeah,
it in?
he had like a Mac 10, and then no. Yeah, no, but like, you know, and Moutier was there, O'Quinn was there, Jerry Sitching was there. So the whole, I thought that was actually kind of cool that they were all there. But back to your question about player development. So something that I kind of noted here that I think is pretty insane is like I said, the shooting. So I'm going to go over some of the different things that I saw, different players from Westchester. So let's start with Hayes, because Hayes is one of the most surprising cases. He shot 45% on over five attempts per game from three, which is like unbelievable. Wow. Considering the 4 years he was at Wisconsin, he shot, I think, two threes a game on average at only 33%. So like, that's a major, like, what the hell? Those are the types of things where like everyone on the, like, do you remember in like 90s Knicks staffs were on like Jeff Van Gundy's staff, like everyone ends up going on to be a head coach, Steve Clifford and these guys.
Right.
Like, that's the type of stuff where you have player development like that, everyone gets a head coaching job later down the road. So the 45% from him was crazy. But then you look down the line, it's like Burke was shooting over six per game in Westchester at 42% from three. He's never shot more than four per game in his career in the NBA, which he did in the first three years in the league. And during those first 3 years in the NBA, he was only a 33% shooter. So 42% is crazy. He's currently shooting 38% in New York on three-point attempts. Wow. Cornette, as good a shooter as you can visually see that he is, only shot 32% on almost four attempts per game over his Vanderbilt career, like 4 years at Vanderbilt. In Westchester, he's shooting almost six a game at 44%. Again, like major what the hell.
Especially considering for the big league club, he's shooting like 28%.
Is it that low?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, and I'm going to get to that too, because I think that some of that is a rhythm thing, and that plays a lot into Dotson, but I want to get to Dotson later.
Yeah,
but
no, I buy that 100%, but yeah.
Yeah. And then same with Hicks. Hicks never shot threes really at UNC. Like, me and Jonathan talked about this. I'm not so sure Roy Williams sets guys up for NBA success, and he was talking about, he feels the same way about Boeheim at Syracuse and their zone defense, but that's all another story. Hicks's career three-point shooting percentage at UNC was like 17% on almost no attempts. And, you know, you watch him now, he's working on it. You can see before the games and stuff. And in Westchester, he's shooting 33% from three. And just another few quick ones, like Paul Watson, career 36% shooter at Fresno State, shooting 37% this season. Xavier Retan-Mays, not a good shooter, 29% career at FSU. This year, he's shooting 34%, which, like, is below average, but that's a huge jump.
Sure.
And Devon Balkman, career 35% shooter at Tennessee, shooting 37% this year from deep. So, like, across the board, pretty much everyone is shooting them. And you would also imagine, like, the line is further, the defenses are better. But, you know, that's something I would really, really, really hang my hat on if I was Westchester and say, you know, look at how we're developing young players and their shooting.
Yeah, I mean, because you mentioned a couple of people who were like maybe only a point or two better. But when like everyone is and then a few of them are significantly better like that, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's kind of like those defensive statistics where like any like you don't trust them. But then when like 12 of them line up to say someone's a good or bad defender, you're like, all right, maybe there's something here. Like,
yeah. And I mean, and as much as it seems arbitrary, like Devon Balkman, for example, career 35% shooter. That's a guy that you know, when you're game planning against him, you're like, okay, try to get out to that. But if he's shooting 37, so he's above average, you're like, okay, like that's the difference of like how people will play you. So it makes a difference.
So any standout players while you were there? I know it's only one game, but
yeah, I mean, obviously Dotson, but like I really liked that kid Devon Balkman. I liked watching him play. I'm not sure he's like a stud, like he's a guy you'll see get called up anytime soon, but He frustrated this guy. I think his name is Davion Barry. So yeah, Balkman, he's not a huge scoring threat. He scores like 5 points a game in general, but he doesn't offer a ton on offense, but he's just a fun guy to watch play defense. He's like Westchester's like Patrick Beverly. Yeah, he made a huge difference though. Yeah, he was relentless. He was a lot like Holiday, like just playing the passing lanes, and he was fun. Rattan Mays did not have a great game. He was the opposite end of that spectrum, but you know what can you do?
Yeah. So we mentioned Mike Miller, the coach, earlier. I want to talk
about the player.
Not the player. I want to talk about him in just a second. First, I want to remind everyone listening that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Leave a review that's a sentence or two. I enjoy hearing what you guys have to say about the show. Good, bad, in between, whatever it is. But don't rate us less than 5 stars. Come on. This is primo content and you know it. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks. Mike Miller. All this year, honestly, without really thinking about it, I was like, wait, is that the same Mike Miller? The hideous-faced NBA player who wore a headband? And you know, but it's not that Mike Miller.
No, I wish it were. Actually, that Mike Miller just got a job on Memphis' staff with Penny Hardaway. Isn't that wild?
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Go figure. But it is a different man.
So, Mike Miller, different man from the Mike Miller that we all know. He won G League Coach of the Year. Do you have any thoughts on him? Like, do you think the Knicks should interview him? How familiar are you with what he's got going on over there?
I am not an expert on some of the stuff he's done. I've watched probably 10 Westchester games this year. Yeah. Like I said, a lot of what he runs, it's so tough to evaluate. I think I would put more stock into evaluating his record based on, like I said, some of the turnover with their roster that they have. I think that's unbelievably hard to deal with. And it's also, I think, really hard to attribute success to one coach, because I think staffs should get a credit, not necessarily a head coach. I think that's like something that gets disproportionately kind of put on a head coach sometimes. But I mean, offensively, he ran a lot of the same stuff that Hornacek did. His adjustments late in the game, I didn't love. There weren't a lot of them. I thought there were some things that he could have done differently. But again, who the hell am I? Like, you know, I'm not an expert in that stuff either. But yeah, no, I mean, obviously, like, the record speaks for itself, considering the turnover they've had. Defensively, they were a top 2 or 3 team in the G League. It's his third year as a coach. He comes from the Spurs tree. I think he was previously an assistant with the Austin Toros, which is the Spurs G League team. So, I mean, look, he deserves an interview for sure. I'm not saying, I don't think I would be like, yeah, this is our guy. Okay. But I don't think it's impossible that he is.
You know? When you said you asked him a couple questions in the presser afterward, or he was asked a couple questions anyway?
Yeah, I asked him a couple, and I think one was on behalf of Alex, actually. And then, you know, we asked him a bunch of stuff. Man, I'm trying to remember what I asked him now. I think I asked him about the lineups and stuff, and I just kind of...
Did he seem, like, sharp? I guess that's kind of what I'm curious. Sharp, charismatic? Like, how would you describe his kind of demeanor?
Oh, yeah, 100%. He was, like... Mm-hmm. Very personable. He answered the questions with pretty good detail. I wanted to know, again, because of the lineup turnover that they had, you know, like, what does he attribute to their success defensively? Because that's a tough, you know, you can't just do that. You can't just have a bunch of different guys. Like, you have to buy into a system defensively. And offensively, I just don't, it's not possible to be a great offensive team. And they really weren't. I think there's only 26 G League teams. They were like 20th or 22nd. In offensive rating. Okay. Yeah. So they weren't, I mean, they made their money on the defensive end, which really I think is just, you know, can you get players to buy in? Can you get them to play for you? So those are good signs for a coaching resume. But I'd asked him about, you know, what he attributes the player development to. And of course he gave the credit to his staff and gave kind of a packaged answer, but definitely the correct one. You know, what did I expect him really to say beyond that? So,
sure.
All
right. That's good detail, good information. I want to close the show by talking about Damian Dotson. I know you've got some thoughts that you want to share with our listenership.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I did a player profile on him grading his summer league play when he played those 5 games in summer league for the Knicks. And I was like, from pretty much from that point on, I had gotten the Damian Dotson foam finger, and I'm the number one fan since then. I thought he was awesome in Summer League. And most of what I've seen since then, I'm just like baffled that I haven't seen him play 30 minutes a night. So we'll go from his junior year in college at Houston. He shot 66% from the floor playing 31 minutes a night, which is it's just wild.
Did he have like a real Morey ball profile? Because that seems impossible taking mid-rangers.
Yeah, I mean, he shot five mid-range, maybe not mid-range, but five two-point attempts or whatever a game.
Okay.
So like that's a healthy number. His senior year at Houston, he shot 44% from three on almost eight attempts per game, which is that's like someone should take that stat line and frame it and like put it in the Museum of Modern Art, because that's unbelievable.
That's impressive.
To me. Yeah, that's crazy. That's like Steph Curry type shit. And in the Summer League, again, that I covered him in over those five games, played 25 minutes a night, 48% from three, 48% from the field. In Westchester, 36 minutes a game, shot 39% from three on six attempts per game. So this is like high volume, high accuracy stuff. Now in New York, 9 minutes a game, 30% from three on one attempt per night. So like, to me, that's a super clear indication that he's just like most people, but especially a young player like a rookie like that. I think shooting is a lot about rhythm, and if you're not getting consistent minutes, I mean, it's just not easy for a guy who makes his money shooting the ball to really see him go in.
On like why he's not getting those minutes? Do you think there's a way to explain it that makes sense? That's just like part of proper development, or do you think the Knicks have made a little bit of a mistake there in his like low workload? Or do you think it's like good because he's getting lots of G League minutes? Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I would love to have an answer. I think I'm pretty frustrated. I don't think that Tim should really be playing, not because he's bad, but like he had the injury stuff. He's playing heavy minutes still, over 30 a night.
I think you want to, you're still developing him. He's young. I've said on the podcast a couple times, 20, 25 minutes would be good. He's like touched almost 40 a couple times, and you're like,
yeah,
what are you doing?
I have no idea.
Not
I don't
the end
know
of the world, about. But it's one of these small details. You're like, don't love that.
Yeah, and I'm not one of those, crucify Hornacek guy. Yeah, I mean, I'm like, I've had enough of him, but like, I'm not one of those guys who's calling for his head. But when I do feel that, it's the minutes distribution. I don't understand it. And defensively, he's like, this is not pitting Dotson against Hardaway, but just from that position, he's like light years more advanced than Hardaway. And actually, like in his games with New York, he's got a defensive rating of 104.5, which is the only people who have a better defensive rating are Ron Baker, who's only played 29 games, and Noah, who's only played 7 games. So like, he's got a better defensive rating than Courtney Lee, Lance Thomas, Neil Akina. He's like a real deal defender.
He's fast and strong too. Like he can hold his position,
And that's another thing. I think in college he averaged seven over his career. I think over those last 2 years in Houston, it was like 7 rebounds a game. So like he's a good rebounder at his position. He can improve his handle a little bit. But even that, that was a concern I had in Summer League, and it's not been a problem over the course of this season. When he plays, I just see potential for him as a playmaker. He's been having some nice dump offs at least like once a game to O'Quinn. So I would love to see more of him, but that's been the story for a lot of the young guys this year.
It'll be interesting to see how he comes back next year with another offseason to work on his game. One of many people, Frank, is who I'm kind of most excited about.
Absolutely.
What he can do there. But, that's one of the reasons I can't figure out if he's in the doghouse or not. They think like he's in the G League and that's like he's getting plenty of minutes and that's good development too. And they still I would love to get inside their heads and know what they think of him, because to me he seems like clearly a part of the future, even if that's just like a solid bench player. But I just can't tell.
I agree. I mean, yeah, you're always curious about their perception of the guy, if it matches with the fans. But no, I'm totally with you. I don't know. He gets minutes at the G League, but he doesn't play all of that. Like, I think out of the 50 games, I can't recall off the top of my head. Let me see. Out of the 50 games they played this year, he played in, where's Dotson? He played in only 13 of them, I think. So, I mean, it's not like he's like getting a ton of burn down there. But yeah. But also he was clearly the best player on the floor when they did play when I went Monday. So yeah.
All right. Well, that tracks with my you know, he's at least a quadruple A player. You know.
To yeah, for sure.
Some
for
baseball
sure.
parlance. But all right, that's all the time we have for right now. I want to thank you so much for joining us, Dylan. It was a good talk as always.
James, thanks for having me. I'll talk to you soon.
Oh, yeah. Chica-chica. That was great. Had another wonderful conversation with Dylan. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. I want to thank you so much for listening to this episode of Locked On Knicks. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Never miss an episode. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. Tell your cat groomer. Tell your dog groomer. Tell your manicurist, right? You got to make some conversation. Do you talk? I've never got a manicure or a pedicure. Should I? I don't know. But tell everyone that you ever meet about Locked On Knicks. It helps us grow. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks. You can follow me on Twitter at NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Always salt the pasta water. And tune in tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Knicks. Peace!